Narol's The Morning After is a production of Narol Pro-Choice Ohio. Enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Randy.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Gabe. Okay, so yesterday we had this awful hearing that went on forever for a bunch of bills. And then finally, 3.5 hours into it, we heard sponsor testimony for two bills in the House that will create new regulations for how abortion facilities handle biological tissue, the byproducts of an abortion.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been 40 years where abortion providers have been operating in the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. They've been following the law the entire time. There hasn't been a problem. But we've got a governor who wants to be president and an attorney general who wants to be governor. And so we've got to have something that these guys can campaign on. So now we got two bills.
Yes, so of course. Of course, it was ridiculous. And this is the thing, you know. We lobbied to make abortion legal so it would be safe and regulated. So it's not like we're against every regulation. It's just stupid regulations that have no basis in medical necessity or the health and well-being of Ohioans that are targeted just at abortion providers. This isn't about making people healthier or safer. This is about shutting down abortion clinics. I mean, the first thing that happened as soon as those bills got introduced was Created Equal went out and did a whole campaign on how, you know, disposing of this material is a weak link. And if we can stop them from being able to dispose the material, then we can close all the clinics down. And that was the first line that came out. So yeah. Tell me that this is about, you know, making sure that things are safe and regulated when really it's all about making sure that abortion providers can no longer operate in Ohio. Just like every other bill. I mean, it puts into the same category as every other bill that we've ever talked about here. It's not about, you know, any kind of medicine or science. It's about closing abortion providers.
Right. You know, the biggest signal that this isn't serious healthcare policy was from Representative Kohler, one of the four bill sponsors that we heard from yesterday.
Because yes. you can't just have two after 3.5 hours of sitting there and waiting.
Right. You know, two House bills, one in the Senate. Each House bill has two sponsors, two main sponsors. Because, you know, everybody's got to have a bite at the apple.
Oh, yeah.
But Representative Kohler took the cake. He gets our walk of shame this week. He compared abortion to slavery and 9/11.
In his first sentence of his testimony. It wasn't even buried. It was like he launched straight into it the second he opened his mouth. It was, you know, there are lots of hard things I have to tell my kids about. 9/11 and slavery and abortion. And they're all the same.
You're proposing healthcare policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that doctors' practices and hospitals are going to have to follow, you know, their hospitals are, you know, a $1 billion industry in this state. You've got some serious consequences for what you're proposing. And you're starting off talking about how you don't know how you're going to explain slavery to your kid.
Yeah.
What on earth are you talking about?
The ironic thing, what I find highly ironic when people compare abortion to slavery is that in slavery, women were forced to have as many babies as possible because that's your capital. Yeah, it's people. So, and the babies are worth more than the adults. Mm-hmm. So I just find it's like, so that makes zero sense. And the 9/11 comparison, I don't even know where he's going with that. Like,
And, you know, when you consider that in the past couple months, we've seen violent rhetoric like this leading to the murder of a police officer, a mom, and a United States veteran who's fighting in the war on terror against actual terrorists that, you know, made 9/11 happen. Yeah. And he's comparing that to abortion. And this veteran was killed supporting his friend getting an abortion in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's such an insult to, you know, the families who've lost loved ones there, to families that have lost loved ones in 9/11, you know, to ancestors of slavery to make these comparisons.
It's really ridiculous.
And to have that be the justification for what's supposed to be healthcare policy.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
The one weird thing was that these bills actually went to the health committee for once.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This wasn't in the abortion committee. Which, again, was kind of strange and weird, too. So, you know, we don't really know why that happened either, but we'll see what happens.
I think it's time for them to acknowledge that this Community and Family Advancement Committee that they created this year, that's been getting, created in 2015, that's been getting all of these abortion bills,
yeah,
is a little bit of a political, you know, tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that if these were serious health bills, they would have gone to the health committee. But the members of the health committee, I think, are sick and tired of this crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the chair of the committee yesterday made it very clear she did not like the circus that was occurring in her hearing room. So
it was nuts. So, you know, if they wanted to be serious about this, they probably would have had conversations with abortion providers, and with, you know, funeral homes or service providers that do handle biological, you know, tissue, medical waste, whatever. They could have talked to women who've had abortions.
What?
The only people they've talked to so far, it appears, is DeWine's office, probably Kasich's office, and Ohio Right to Life.
Yeah.
So.
Very serious about doing this.
Yeah.
Very serious about closing abortion clinics. That's the only thing they're serious
about. That is true. In no other legislation that affects the healthcare industry, do they write the bill first, start having hearings, and then maybe follow up later by saying, hey, how will this affect you?
Yeah.
In every other instance of writing responsible legislation, you start off with those discussions first.
Yeah.
And here they're not even included in the process.
Mm-hmm. And that was obvious, too. They didn't even talk to the hospitals, because when Rep. Sears did her testimony on 419, she talked about how there was archaic language that they included in the bill because LSC thought it was the right language, this hospital type incineration. And they've already pointed out that that's a ridiculous notion and that doesn't exist anymore. So obviously she didn't even just not talk to abortion providers. She didn't even talk to the hospitals that they were going to regulate.
Right.
So, I mean, they really didn't care at all about what they were doing.
No.
And they don't know about it either, because one of the other questions that was asked was, you know, if this really is about the dignity of these remains, shouldn't you be treating remains from stillbirth and miscarriages in the same way that you are treating these remains from abortion? And Representative Sears again said, well, we're just really making the laws equal because this is already required in stillbirths and miscarriages, but it's not required in abortions. And I've read all the code and there's nothing in there about how you dispose of tissue from stillbirths and miscarriages.
Right.
So if we were making all things equal, there'd be no regulations on either end. So this is really obviously about regulating abortion providers, not about these products of conception.
Yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to things like miscarriages, this is like the biggest place that government does not belong in people's lives.
Yes.
You know, when you've had a miscarriage, the last thing you want is to figure out, okay, am I complying with the law?
Yeah.
You know, it's such a sensitive time for people. Mm-hmm. So they really
you could
just
have
need
one
to
and not
it.
Even know it, exactly. And then are you going to be in trouble?
Right,
because you didn't go and get a death certificate and have it buried or cremated, but maybe you didn't even know you were having one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as we sit here, Purvi Patel is in an Indiana jail cell because she had a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they feel that she didn't follow the law by losing that pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's a very slippery slope. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, there was some indication from Rep. Sears, who has House Bill 419, which is slightly less ridiculous than House Bill 417, slightly.
It could be, but that's such a...
I'm not sure. What are the differences?
So the big difference is House Bill 417 is totally made to shame women as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
So
417 is complete bullshit, top to bottom.
Yeah, which is why you can say the other one's slightly better, because it's not complete bullshit from top to bottom.
Okay.
But it would require the clinics to ask the woman how she wants to dispose of the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And it just another way of, you know, kind of slamming, you know, we force them to do the ultrasounds and talk about viability of pregnancies and give medically kind of ambiguous information on those kinds of things to kind of push the woman, you know, because their whole idea is, well, if she just sees it on the ultrasound, she won't want to make this decision,
right.
Even though all the science on that doesn't back that up at all.
No.
And this is just a continuation.
Or common sense. sense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, women know, one of the most frustrating moments we've ever had in the state house, and that's saying something, was when they did the heartbeat bill hearing, when they did the ultrasounds. Mm-hmm. And Ohio Right to Life isn't for the heartbeat bill, but I guess that day, you know, the president of Ohio Right to Life was, you know, at least excited that, you know, all those pro-aborts, as he put it, on the committee would finally see an ultrasound. On that committee is Nikki Antonio, who has kids. She's seen an ultrasound.
Right.
You know, Representative Garland on the committee had seen ultrasounds before. Yeah. I mean, I think actually everybody...
ultrasound. I mean...
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not like this whole idea that women have no idea what they're doing when they walk into an abortion clinic is just so... ridiculous. So, you know, the House Bill 417 kind of backs it up with, you know, well, you need to sign this piece of paper that says how you want us to either cremate or bury the remains, because this is really serious what you're doing today.
It's like they don't know what's happening inside there. I'm not sure what's going to happen in a few months, so I'm just going to nip this in the bud because, you know, something crazy might happen from it. So that's why we need to show them, because they don't know what's going on in there. Like, that is completely
women
ridiculous.
Are not idiots, and once you realize that, you'll stop passing this stuff. So that's the main piece of 417, is that it requires burial or cremation only, and it requires this form. And there's all kinds of other regulations on what you have to do to cremate or bury. And so when you really start digging into it, there's concerns about privacy of the patients and whether or not their names would be public. Because of this new regulation, and also cost of it, you know, 20,000 extra fetal death certificates having to be processed by local health departments every year. There's no money in this bill for that.
Yeah.
So it's just another, you know, unfunded mandate from the Kasich administration on local governments, which he's done over and over and over again.
Because they're fiscally conservative.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, your local taxes have gone up and your state taxes have gone down.
Yeah.
And ultimately, there'll be additional costs for women, you know, if and when abortion providers have to comply with this. Because if they're offering one form of disposal, if it's cremation or if it's, you know, burial or incineration, and now you have to offer choices, then by definition, you know, you're going to have more costs.
Yeah.
More options is more costs.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we've already reduced the number of abortion facilities in the state of Ohio, and now you're increasing the cost, you're making it that much more difficult for women to get, you know, the safe and legal procedure that she's chosen to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, actually a reporter asked me yesterday, like, is there, you know, do you have like a cost estimate? And I told him I actually don't, because we've heard so many prices from all over. I mean, I've talked to people at the national level that says some clinics have gotten quotes as high as $1,000.
Jeez.
Per remain. So, you know, and some other providers said as low as like 200 or so. I mean, that's even that on the 200 range, you're probably increasing the price of an abortion by a third.
Right.
So this is what, you know, and the bill says you can't pass it along, but I mean, in order to operate, that's going to have to occur. So, so yeah, I mean, that really, that's what we're looking at. So we'll see what happens. I mean, for the sponsor, Sears, one of the sponsors of 419, seemed kind of open to discussions about actually not making it an attack on abortion providers, because she kept saying, oh, this isn't about attacking abortion providers. Well, let's see if the money is where her mouth is, and we'll see, you know, if she is open to as much change as she said that she would be. The funniest moment actually was when she said that, of course, when the Ohio Department of Health makes the rules about this, they'll consult all the people impacted by it. I almost fell out of my chair at that point, because it was so laughable that, you know, they've changed the rules several times on abortion providers in Ohio, and they've never, ever consulted any abortion providers on any of those rules. So the notion that, oh, yes, of course they should, and put an interested parties meeting together and listen to all the interested parties, but that does not happen. Highway Hodges will talk to Governor Kasich, and they will decide what they want to do, and they will do whatever they want to do. So,
the Ohio Department of Health is clearly just a tool of the Kasich administration to try and attack abortion providers. So we'll see where this goes. That was just the first hearing for these two bills. The other Senate bill still has to get its hearing, and then we'll hear from proponents, who Lord only knows who they drag out to try and say that this is absolutely necessary. We'll see.
So. Well, luckily for us, you know, I think about five of those bills we had to sit through hearings on got voted out. So maybe we won't have to sit through 12 bills before this one next time.
Okay. So separately, but also, depicting the state of Ohio accurately in terms of reproductive health. Our national office, NARAL Pro-Choice America, put out the Who Decides report card. Mm-hmm. Nationally, our country gets a D for reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. Ohio gets a big fat F.
Of course.
So,
can we ground our legislature for that? Send them to their rooms. can't come back.
Right.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about that too is it's not just abortions; it's family planning. It really does look at like women's health, at, you know, in a slightly larger picture. And frankly, we've had an F. This isn't a surprise. We've had an F every year since I've been here, and I've been here for longer than I'd like to admit. So, you know, but what is interesting is that we've gone up in number. Like we used to be like 48th or something like that. And mm-hmm. so it just kind of shows you where, what number are we? I can't even remember.
Did they
rank us? But, you know, we've actually gone up in number because so many other states have done what we've done at this mm-hmm. point. What's really interesting is, you know, in so many places, you know, they're passing laws like making abortion clinics ambulatory surgical facilities. And we're like, yeah, we did that in the 90s.
Right.
So much of what you kind of saw in Texas and in some of these other states, like we did a decade ago. So yeah. Everybody's just kind of unfortunately catching up to our really, really, really bad laws.
Right. We got such a low grade because of a variety of reasons. There are specific abortion bans in effect in Ohio, post-viability. Mm-hmm. There's restrictions on insurance coverage and different ways to specifically harm low-income women's mm-hmm. access to abortion. It restricts young women's access to abortion, especially mm-hmm. if they need judicial permission.
Mm-hmm.
We give $1 million to CPCs, and they've got those stupid Choose Life license plates.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of reasons. Governor Kasich's record is added into this. Mm-hmm. The legislative record is added into this. 91% of Ohio counties have no abortion clinic. So Ohio gets a big fat F.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
Go us.
I would love to be able to say that there's nowhere to go but up, but that's totally not true.
Yeah, the Ohio legislature proves that day in and day out.
Right.
Like, just when you think they've gone as ridiculous, they can go. Look. Yeah.
And because this grade reflects all around our reproductive health,
mm-hmm.
This is a big reason why we're dead last for the infant mortality mm-hmm. rate mm-hmm. for African-American women and just horrible for all women.
Yeah.
This is a really bad thing. And for, you know, having a governor who would love to be able to claim that he's a moderate, he's mm-hmm. he's not.
No.
When it comes to reproductive health care for women and for all Ohioans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
He's not. None of them running are.
No.
No, they aren't. So.
God,
but he wants to be, the Prince of Lightness. Yeah. That was my favorite headline. He said something to the effect of, you know, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people who are really, you know, angry out there the way our country is going. And, you know, so many of the candidates are like the Prince of Darkness, you know, playing into that doom and gloom feeling. But I want to be, you know, the candidate of optimism. I want to be the, you know, the Prince of Lightness.
Right.
It's so funny that, like, the rest of the country is finally seeing goofy, stupid, weird John Kasich, you know, these all weird lines mm-hmm. that, like, you think, you got to think in his head he thought that sounded good. But, you know, when you actually speak the words out loud, like when you talk about your hot wife or how she's at home doing laundry or, you know.
He's an angry guy.
Oh, and he's totally an angry guy.
Yeah.
Anytime you go up against him with anything, he gets, I mean, actually there was, right before he signed the budget, 2 years ago, we were doing a demonstration or something in the state house, and he just happened to be in the rotunda area in the state house.
Okay.
So we like nudged one of our key volunteers. We're like, you should go over and ask him if he's going to veto the stuff out of the budget. And like the look on, I mean, this was just normal. She was normally dressed. She didn't have a Planned Parenthood t-shirt on. Like, you could not tell that she was anybody.
Right.
Went up and asked him, you know, if he would consider doing it. And like, he just like whipped around and like this look in his eyes. And it was just like, that's not how you treat people.
Right.
Like, so yeah.
How dare you question my authority?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, he's not crazy. Or his demeanor in the Cleveland Plain Dealer editorial board meeting with Ed Fitzgerald, where he like refused to acknowledge Ed Fitzgerald even existed in the room, or you know, all those things that we know about him here, they're finally kind of seeing.
Yeah, there. He's in no way the Prince of Lightness. Good Lord.
So weird.
Yeah, I mean, when you're representing or trying to be the leader of a national political party that just has so much hatred, just completely strung through all of its policies, you know, on immigration, on denying people health care, on denying people education, not giving a damn about the environment when people are drinking lead and we've got fracking causing earthquakes and poisoning people's water here in Ohio. You know, how can you claim to be the Prince of Lightness when there's just so much darkness in your own political party?
He's not really denouncing that or anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to think that that's just like a small group of people and that there's actually some, you know, like just regular people who happen to call themselves Republican, but they're, but I don't know, maybe there's, maybe there are no moderate Republicans anymore and that's true. But there's, I just hate to think that that would be like all of those people think those things and that believe that. And it's just like, that's just so disheartening and just,
Well, the thing is, like, of course, there are moderate Republicans. There's moderate Republican voters and there's supposed moderates in the legislature, but they still vote the way that their party tells them to vote. So, you know, even if they are rational and reasonable, it doesn't matter because their voting record is still going to be heinous and awful. So,
So, yeah. Presidential politics.
Is it over yet?
There hasn't been a single vote cast yet. No, it's not
gonna,
over yet.
It's going to come faster than we know it. And I feel like I'm going to be like having like, I don't know, like very, it's going to be really stressful.
You think?
I just feel like it's going to be so stressful. I'm just going to need a lot of wine.
for the next 10 and a half months.
And especially the night of, like, election night. It's just, oh, my God, like, pins and needles. But, you know, I feel confident that we're going to win. But, you know, I don't, obviously, it's going to be a lot of hard work. But, yeah.
You don't want Donald Trump to be your next president?
Hecky no.
What about Sarah Palin as running mate?
Oh my God. Sarah Palin. You saw, I mean, I want to get off on a tangent. Like, Sarah Palin, she endorsed him. And if you saw like the little freeform speech that she did for him,
it was classic.
And talking about, you know, the Middle East and Muslims and Islam and just, and the whole, how she did, I'm not even going to do it because it was highly offensive, but it's just like making noises and saying, like, you know, oh, let them do what they're doing over there. And she's like, and let Allah sort it out. Like, you are so offensive right now. Please have several seats. You're not nobody. Like, where did you come from? You don't care about any of this stuff. You're just trying to have your next 15 minutes of fame again.
Right.
And you're not making any sense. Like, Sarah Palin, she need to get the walk of shame too this week. Like, sit down.
The part that you're talking about, though, is horribly offensive as it was, was actually formed in coherent sentences in English. There were parts of that speech that were just like noises and syllables.
Yes.
She said something about God clinging, bitter clinging. I'm like, what a bitter clinging.
Yes.
What does that mean?
And she's trying to use her old catchphrases again, but it doesn't make any sense how she was like, drill baby, we need to drill baby drill down on our conservative ideas. Geez. But it's like, honey, it's like, no, like, stop.
I really don't think she was sober. I don't. Like, I'm serious. I don't.
She is off. Like, she really, I mean, you're right.
She's either off her meds or she's on her meds. It's one of the two. Other. She was not sober.
Yes. I mean, she just sounds completely crazy. Like, no, making no sense whatsoever. Like, Sarah Palin, like, I don't, girlfriend, like, don't know what's going on.
Well, and then she blamed Obama for her son getting arrested for domestic violence.
Right.
That was I think.
That's
my
one of those
part.
Funny things. I saw someone writing about it, and they were saying how they thought they were joking that Sarah Palin is going to blame Obama for her son, and then it really happened. Like,
thanks, Obama.
Yes.
Yeah. Her son gets arrested for, you know, beating his ex-girlfriend
and
whipping out a gun.
It's all
Obama's fault. So,
like, there is room to have an honest conversation about, you know, the health care and the mental health services.
Of course. And the VA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
After your son loses it and beats up his girlfriend is not the time to start that conversation.
No.
And it's certainly not the time to point fingers at the president.
Yeah.
The one who brought her son home rather than the one who sent her son away, which was not Obama. But we'll just leave that one alone.
Yeah, right. Details.
Details.
And somebody pointed out that, you know, when he served, he was serving under the Bush administration, who started the war.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Sarah Palin.
She's back.
Yeah, no kidding.
You betcha.
10 and a half months.
Oh, my gosh.
God. 10 and a half months. It's like having a baby start to finish, but we're still in that trying to get pregnant phase.
Yeah. Great.
It is highly entertaining. It's scary, but entertaining at the same time. I mean, it's like watching a train wreck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Last thing, Bernie.
Yes, Bernie. You know,
God love him.
Yes. So he had an interview with Rachel Maddow, which I saw, and he was talking about, you know, how NARAL for Choice America, Planned Parenthood, the Human Rights Campaign, they've all endorsed Hillary Clinton for president in the primary. And so Rachel asked him, she was like, well, are you trying to go for these endorsements? Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, then he touted the other ones he's gotten. And he was like, well, it's really crazy to me. I see it every day. We're not only taking on like the Wall Street establishment, but we're taking on the political establishment, and basically saying that like NARAL, Planned Parenthood, HRC are like the establishment.
That he should be taken on? Because I don't think his voters want him taking on Planned Parenthood. Like,
right. No.
Are you freaking kidding me here?
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. When I heard him talking about it, I don't think he meant take us on. I don't know what he meant by that, actually.
Exactly.
Really, like, but yeah, for whatever reason, he was like, he's taking on us, the establishment, and that they're going behind Hillary. I don't know. I mean, he's touted his other endorsements that he's gotten from like grassroots groups like Move On and Democracy for America, which are, you know, all awesome groups as well. So I don't really know. Like, I think he was just kind of like, you know, trying to, I don't know. I guess
I think it's tough for him to admit the fact that she has so many more endorsements.
Yeah.
You know, she's got a political campaign machine.
Yeah,
for sure.
That she's been, you know, working on directly or indirectly for nearly a decade now.
Yeah.
Well,
try and get her elected president.
The Clinton machine goes back into the 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I don't think anyone, is like, doesn't think that Hillary Clinton is not somehow, I mean, she is, that doesn't, it's not necessarily a bad thing just because you've been in it a long time, you're a career politician, and you establishment, that doesn't make you inherently bad. Like, that just means you've been around a while.
And the entire idea of there being, you know, an establishment, that first off, that's not a real thing. And, you know, every election cycle, we've got some politician that's trying to say that he's an outsider and that's why you should elect him.
Even though they've been there for 20 years.
How long has Bernie been in Congress?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you've got somebody that's saying that you shouldn't elect that person. They're an outsider. And it's like, come on, which is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so this whole, you know, I'm experienced, but I'm not establishment. It's, you know, this is a lot of phony baloney talk. But for Planned Parenthood, especially, to have just been specifically, you know, targeted through a bill that passed through the U.S. House and Senate to have their funding attacked. If they were really part of this establishment, they wouldn't have legislation going to the president's desk to try and defund them.
Mm-hmm. True.
We would have public funding for abortion. We wouldn't have the Hyde Amendment. We would, yeah. I mean, if we right. were the establishment, the world would be such a better place.
Right. I mean, right now yeah. we're at the point where what we've got, you know, in our corner is a pro-choice president mm-hmm. who promised and followed through with the mm-hmm. veto, and several good pro-choice senators, including Bernie Sanders and, mm-hmm. you know, Sherrod Brown here in Ohio, mm-hmm. that make up, you know, enough of a minority where mm-hmm. the veto stands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we're losing in state houses. We're losing in Congress. So there's no pro-choice establishment. Even Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Nancy Pelosi are making headlines by saying, you know, statements that aren't things. In line with pro-choice mm-hmm. values. Yeah. And this is the minority leader in the U.S. mm-hmm. House and the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
Yeah.
We're not the establishment.
No.
No.
Even though, like you said, we have definitely pro-choice people who have been pro-choice all their careers and everything, they're still afraid to say mm-hmm. abortion and abortion on demand and we should right. pay for abortion with public funds. Like, they're still afraid to say all those things.
Yeah.
Right. So, kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, he'd probably choose different words if he had it to say over again, but... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yep.
10 and a half months.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's all for this week. Kind of a short show, thankfully. Yeah. Hopefully even less next week.
It'd be nice if the legislature leaves us alone.
All right. Maybe. Until then, we'll see you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.